Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. There are very few people in the United States, except perhaps children, preteens, and a few immature teenagers, who do not know what happens when an abortion takes place. We know that babies are torn by enormous force from their mother's wombs, or they are cut in little pieces and sucked out of their mother's bodies, or they are poisoned by salt solution, or they are killed by prostaglandin, or they are delivered prematurely with the intention of killing them. As gruesome and obnoxious as abortion is for the child, what does it do for the mother? What happens to the mother when an abortion takes place? Even if we do not care for the baby in the mother's body, surely we care for mothers. We need, therefore, to examine very carefully the grave dangers to the health and well-being of mothers who want to have an abortion or who have already had abortions. My friends, the majority of those who support abortion on demand would like their fellow Americans to believe that abortion is no more dangerous than having a wart removed from a woman's hand. They become very angry and very defensive when pro-life speakers discuss the grave physical, emotional, and spiritual dangers to the women who have abortions, even legal abortions. There is an organization in the state of Tennessee, and probably in other states as well, whose major reason for being, according to their own announcements, is to keep abortion safe and legal in Tennessee. Abortion is legal in Tennessee and in all 50 other states, with the possible exception of Louisiana, and their law has not been reviewed by the United States Supreme Court. But it is not safe, not for the child, not for the mother, not for society. Abortion on demand has to be an evil and as inexcusable as any law any nation has ever had. Neither God nor God-fearing people can look with favor on the destruction of millions and millions of creatures who are made in the image of God. David Reardon's outstanding book, Aborted Women, Silent No More, has one chapter on the physical risk of abortion. Dr. Reardon affirms, and hundreds of other sources confirm, that abortion is never without risks. Page 89. Although you would never get the impression from most of the publications and pronouncements of Planned Parenthood and similar organizations. How could Planned Parenthood continue to make millions and millions of dollars performing abortions if they told their clients about the dangers of abortion? By the way, if you think Planned Parenthood, the Women's Liberation Movement, and similar groups have high and holy motives in recommending and in performing abortions, please think again. Money, convenience, anger, bitterness, and power are the primary motivations, not the strengthening of the home or the care of mothers and of babies. Dr. Reardon points out that abortion providers have the option of reporting or not reporting complications resulting from abortions. The federal courts have given abortionists the kind of shelter from making their mistakes known that other doctors and health care providers can only dream about. As a result, Dr. Reardon says, any laws which attempt to require that deaths and complications resulting from abortions be recorded, much less reported, are unconstitutional. Page 90. Would you like to have someone show you which provision of the Constitution makes that kind of guarantee? In the United Kingdom, professional health care providers believe that fewer than 10% of the complications surrounding abortion are actually reported to the government agencies. How can people in the United Kingdom, the United States, or elsewhere know how dangerous abortion really is unless they demand that hospitals report all deaths and all complications from abortions? How can we be an informed people without that information? Or does anyone care about such matters? Medical doctors are taught to be very careful in their diagnosis and in their treatment of illnesses. Oftentimes, quack doctors such as homeopaths, iridologists, reflexologists, and acupuncturists are inventing symptoms and diseases so they can hoodwink the public. Are legitimate medical doctors, or those who should be legitimate, immune to such practices? A 20-year-old woman died a few hours after having a saline or salt solution abortion. Her death was creatively listed as due to spontaneous gangrene of the ovary. How's that for quack medicine? There are serious medical complications associated with every type of abortion. I shall list the types of abortions and discuss some of the health problems connected to each. First, suction, aspiration, or curettage. Most of the complications associated with abortion are taken from Dr. Reardon's book, Aborted Women, Silent No More. Dr. Reardon says, the immediate or short-term complications rate for vacuum abortions is approximately 12%. A major German study found that the total morbidity rate for vacuum aspiration exceeded 31%. In some cases, the uterus is perforated, or a limb or a skull is left in the uterus. As a result, life-threatening infections can and do develop. Page 94. In addition, convulsions, heart arrest, and death are not uncommon in these circumstances. In one study of 74 women killed by legal abortions, anesthesia complications ranked as the third leading cause of death. The nine most common major complications resulting from abortions are infection, excessive bleeding, embolism, ripping or perforation of the uterus, anesthesia complications, convulsions, hemorrhage, cervical and endotoxic shock. Page 95. Second, the possible complications associated with suction curettage are virtually the same for dilation and curettage, except they are approximately 20% more frequent with dilation and curettage. Page 96. Third, saline or salt solutions are very dangerous. Reason alone ought to tell us that introducing a salt solution into the human body could cause severe reactions. The rate of major complications associated with saline abortions are about 5 times as great as for the first trimester suctions. It may be shocking to you, as it was to me, to learn that saline abortions were first developed in the concentration camps of Nazi Germany. The Japanese have been performing abortions rather vigorously since 1942, but they have outlawed saline abortions because of their grave danger to the mother. Yet in America, saline abortion is second only to heart transplants as the elective surgery with the highest fatality rate. Page 96. Fourth, prostaglandin abortions can cause spontaneous ruptures in the uterine wall, convulsions, hemorrhage, coagulation defects, and cervical injury. One of the most embarrassing complications, at least from the doctor's viewpoint, is live birth. That could be one of the reasons some abortionists prefer saline abortions, even though they know that saline abortions are more dangerous. How disconcerting on the part of the doctor to try to kill the baby in the mother's womb, to have that baby born alive and kicking. What do you do with a live baby you intended to kill? Hysterotomy is basically the same as a cesarean section, except the purpose of this procedure is to destroy the baby. Any operation as serious as a cesarean section has some risks, and not just to the baby. The risk is almost 100% to the baby. but to the mother also. Dr. Robert Crist, a Kansas City abortionist, says, "The abortion patient has a right not only to be rid of the growth called a fetus in her body, but also has a right to a dead fetus." Pages 97 and 98. Of all the rights the human family enjoys, that is one I did not know existed, the right of a mother to a dead fetus. If Dr. Crist's statement does not cause your hair to stand on end, I do not know what would. Such a statement is medically, morally, and spiritually idiotic. Very briefly, let me outline some of the long-term risk of abortion. Number one, there is a high risk of infection. In one study of 1,183 abortions, 27% of the patients acquired post-abortion infections, resulting in fevers lasting 3 days or longer. Scar tissue can develop on the fallopian tubes. Such scar tissue may bring about an increased risk of ectopic pregnancies. Page 99. Since the legalization of abortion in 1973, there has been a 300% increase in the occurrence of ectopic pregnancies in the United States. As any medical doctor will tell you, ectopic pregnancies, that is, pregnancies outside the womb, can cause severe damage to a woman. For every 100,000 cases of ectopic pregnancy, 300 women die due to rupture and hemorrhage. Page 100. During an abortion, a woman's cervix can be lacerated and do permanent damage to the woman. Such damage can increase the risk of miscarriage as much as tenfold. There also seems to be a direct connection between abortion and cancer. A recent study performed by California researchers found that the risk of breast cancer doubled among women who abort their first pregnancy. Page 102. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, the Japanese have been performing abortions on a widespread scale since World War II. They have had a tremendous amount of experience with women who have had their babies aborted. The following information from a Japanese survey should be an eye-opener. 9% of those who were aborted were subsequently sterile. 14% suffered recurring miscarriages. 17% experienced menstrual irregularities. 20-30% reported abdominal pain, dizziness, and headaches. And there was a 400% increase in ectopic pregnancies. Page 104. The physical dangers of abortion have been established. They are too well known to be denied. But does abortion cause any guilt or emotional pain? A few women, as I have already indicated, seem to suffer emotionally very little. Others have a few years of trauma. They hurt for a while, and then seem to overcome their heartaches. But a considerable number of women never recover from what they have experienced. They are literally devastated and never really get over their abortions. One woman at the age of 75 said she still suffered emotionally from an abortion which was performed 50 years before. Every day she thought about the baby she never had. There simply is no way a good woman can have an abortion and not hurt deeply over it. The foreword to Dr. Reardon's book, Aborted Women, Silent No More, was written by Nancy Jo Mann, the founder of an anti-abortion group called WEBA, Women Exploited by Abortion. Let me read a few excerpts from her foreword to Dr. Reardon's book. Nancy Jo Mann claims that the doctor who performed her abortion never told her of any risk involved in a saline abortion. She says, "For some reason, it never entered my mind that with an abortion she would have to die. I had never wanted my baby to die. I only wanted to get rid of my problem." How many hundreds of thousands of girls have had abortions with the same understanding, or better, misunderstanding, of what was taking place? And a doctor who is sworn to do no harm can do that to young women. What mother can forget having her baby kick her sides while the mother is pregnant? After Nancy Jo Mann had had an abortion, she says, "Even today, I remember her very last kick on my left side, but I was never the same again. The abortion not only killed my daughter, it killed a part of me." How in the world could it be otherwise for a woman who respects her reproductive ability and who values all human life? Or should all human life, including the life of the unborn, be valued? Better still, how does God view unborn human life? Nancy Jo confesses to being filled with guilt and sorrow. She felt empty and lived under a constant feeling of dread. The abortion was so traumatic that she began to fire up on heroin, cocaine, anything and everything she could find. She even began dealing in drugs, robbing houses, and living a promiscuous sex life. Her burden was so heavy that she tried to take her own life. Nancy Jo says that no less than 90% of all aborted women experience moderate to severe emotional and psychiatric stress following an abortion. Before abortion on demand became legal in the United States, women who wanted abortions had to find medical doctors who would certify that the woman had to have an abortion, or she might die. Or she would have to get a psychiatrist to testify that the woman would suffer emotionally, such as taking her own life, in order to get an abortion. If the price were right, a psychiatrist could be found who would provide justification for an abortion. The truth is, fewer pregnant women commit suicide than would normally be the case. Aborted women, according to Nancy Jo Mann, face a suicide risk 9 times greater than non-aborted women. Approximately 20% of the women who had been aborted reported they actually made 1 or more suicide attempts. Dr. Reardon tells of the appearance of Shelley Winters on the Phil Donahue Show. Shelley Winters had been sexually promiscuous and had had 3 abortions. She confessed, "I'm a very lonely woman. I would give up everything, my money, my Academy Awards, my career, if only I could have those children now." Then she broke into uncontrollable sobs. The audience roared with sympathetic applause. Phil switched to a commercial. Page 69. Dr. Julius Fogel is a psychiatrist and obstetrician who has performed hundreds of abortions himself. Yet he has expressed deep concern about the psychological effects of abortion on the mother's mind. Dr. Fogel speaks his mind very plainly. Abortion is an impassioned subject. Every woman, whatever her age, background, or sexuality, has a trauma destroying a pregnancy. A level of humanness is touched. This is a part of her own life. She destroys a pregnancy. She is destroying herself. There is no way it can be innocuous. One is dealing with the life force. It is totally beside the point whether or not you think life is there. You cannot deny that something is being created, and that this creation is physically happening. Often the trauma may sink into the unconscious and never surface in the woman's lifetime. But it is not as harmless and casual as many in the pro-abortion crowd insist. A psychological price is paid. It may be alienation. It may be a pushing away from human warmth, perhaps a hardening of the maternal instinct. Something happens on the deeper levels of a woman's consciousness when she destroys a pregnancy. I know that as a psychiatrist. Page 141. Dr. Reardon's book contains many personal stories of young women who have had abortions. the names of the women are probably fictitious. But their stories must be heard by every woman contemplating abortion. Carolyn Walton says concerning her abortion, "I began having nightmares about my murdered baby. I began drinking more and more until I was up to 5 bottles of alcohol a week. So I started taking tranquilizers to help me sleep and pep pills to keep me going through the day. 4 times I deliberately overdosed trying to commit suicide." Page 146. When Nancy Gilmore became pregnant out of wedlock, she was encouraged by her boyfriend to have an abortion. He said he was too young to be a father. She actually wanted to have her baby, but received no support from anybody to do so. She went to an abortion clinic and was never told there were any alternatives to abortion. When she asked the doctor if the baby in her body was alive, he said no. The doctor had to know he was lying. After her abortion, Nancy became very depressed. She had a great amount of trouble concentrating and experienced a complete personality change. She is very, very lonely, she says. Pages 148-149. For those who believe abortion does little harm to the emotions of a woman, they need to listen to these words from Dr. Magda Dennis, an American psychiatrist who supports abortion. "No one is untouched. No one is untorn. Each, propelled by who he is, builds his own mythical world where this is all right, that is wrong, one thing is just, another a crime. Morality is a fluid notion." Page 268. I have discussed with you the physical and psychological risk and complications of abortion. No one who has done his homework can dispute the evidence I have presented. You may think the physical and emotional complications do not matter, and of course that is your prerogative. But you cannot deny them without questioning the research of doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, and many others. You would also have to doubt the integrity of thousands and thousands of women who have testified of their own hurt, disappointment, and distress. How can we harmonize the facts I have presented today with the propaganda of the pro-death lobby? We know the destruction perpetrated on innocent babies in their mothers' wombs, but we cannot condemn abortion on that basis only. If the baby is no more than a mass of protoplasm, if it really is not human and of infinite value, babies can be aborted without serious damage to the human family. The physical and emotional complications can be devastating to women involved, and are in thousands and thousands of cases. But these could be justified if the baby is not human, and if there is no God before whom we must give an account of our behavior. If God does not exist, there are no moral absolutes, nor can there be any. So what difference would the abortion of 25 million babies make? But babies are human from conception, as every informed person must admit. They are of eternal worth, since they are made in the image and the likeness of Almighty God. Genesis 1:26-27. There is no doubt, absolutely no doubt, that babies are human even in their mother's wombs. So how could you explain the Jackson Sun's editorial on Thursday, June 20, 1991? The editorial has the title, "Abortion Ban Chilling." Please listen and weep. Louisiana's dramatic move this week to ban virtually all abortions should rouse those who support a woman's right to make her own reproductive decisions. In a devastating blow to those who support that freedom, the Louisiana legislature on Tuesday mustered the votes to override Governor Buddy Romer's veto of the most restrictive abortion law in the nation. The bill bans most abortions and jails physicians who perform them. It is aimed at challenging Roe versus Wade, the 1973 U.S. Supreme Court decision which legalized abortion. For too long, many have felt confident that abortion would remain a private issue for a woman to decide with her family, her physician, and her church. Optimistic that abortion would remain legal, many who support abortion rights have kept silent, unwilling to enter the public debate about abortion, and suffer the biting, often personal attacks of strident abortion opponents. Louisiana's move shows silence is a luxury. Those who support a woman's right to choose cannot continue to enjoy. Lawmakers in Tennessee and elsewhere must hear from their constituents who support keeping abortion legal. Page 6A. Let me close today with a few questions pertaining to the editorial which I have read to you. Since when do a woman, her physician, her family, and her church have the right to destroy human life for the convenience of the mother? Since when have the abortion supporters been silent in their support of abortion? They have lobbied, threatened, and sought to punish those who disagree with them on abortion. How could the Jackson Sun editorial writers be ignorant of that fact? Did you notice this statement by the editorial writers of the Jackson Sun? The supporters of abortion did not want to suffer the biting, often personal and sometimes violent attacks of strident abortion opponents. If any statement were ever designed to create prejudice and bigotry, that was surely the one. Who has been more violent in their behavior? Abortion supporters or pro-life people? This editorial deserves an answer, which I will plan to provide in the not-too-distant future. The Jackson Sun did make one worthwhile observation. Lawmakers in Tennessee and elsewhere must hear from their constituents. Will you please write or call your representative today? Ask him to vote against abortion and for life. Thank you for listening, and may God bless you.